This time of year, the school calendar really starts to fill up. Spring activities, testing season, and that final push toward the end of the year. It's a great moment for kids to stay focused and build confidence in what they're learning. That's where IXL comes in. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand their schoolwork, from math and reading to writing and science. It's designed for pre-K through 12th grade, with personalized interactive content that adapts to each child's level and pace. IXL makes it easy to stay on track with instant feedback and clear explanations, skills organized by grade level, and simple progress tracking. It fits into even the busiest spring schedules. It's also trusted nationwide. In fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Welcome to another World of UX podcast. This is your host, Darren Hood. Thanks for taking the time to join us on today. A special welcome, as always, to those joining us for the first time. We're going to have another potpourri session on today. And again, for those of you new to the podcast, potpourri is where we just talk about some random topics just to share my thoughts. Think of it as an editorial, if you will. But not just an editorial. We talk sometime about the difference between opinion and expert opinion. And this is definitely an expert opinion. This is based on things. The things that I say are based on things that I see, things I've experienced, things that result from data I've gathered, because I do talk to people from all over the world and get their perspectives. I find out what's going on in their arena, in their neck of the woods. I find out what's going on in their jobs. I find out what types of highs, what types of lows, what types of challenges, what types of successes, and this information, not just from a sample set of one, which some people would love to think that that's where some of this stuff comes from, but it's the things that I'm talking about are things that are being experienced, things that I am observing, and things that other people are observing and experiencing from across the board. And the reason the show is called The World of UX is because we talk about things, not just how to do the work. There's enough people doing that. But there's a lot of things going on in and around the discipline that affect all of us, and things that we need to know, things that people sometimes they know they're happening, but they don't want to face them. They don't want to think about them. But in order to achieve success, these are things that we do really need to know about. So it takes a very emotionally intelligent mindset to embrace challenges, to see them head on, to realize, let's not try to avoid the bump in the road. Let's learn how to navigate around it. Let's understand the reality of it. Let's see what we can do about fixing the bump in the road, things of that nature. So it's a challenging mindset to have, I think, based on what I hear from some people, but you can either know what's going on and learn how to navigate it and face it, or you can stick your head in the ground and then eventually suffer the consequences because you fail to manage it appropriately. So that's my mindset. That's why I do what I do. I love the discipline. I'm dedicated to the discipline. I care about the discipline. I care about people in the discipline. So I talk about things that may or may not be convenient, comfortable. We're going to talk about everything. It's easy to talk about what everybody likes. It's easy to talk about what benefits you. It's easy to talk about what makes a person feel good. It takes a bit more character, if you will, to talk about the things that might actually ruffle feathers or make people feel uncomfortable. Just things that people just don't want to face. And there is a lot of that going on today. So we're going to touch on, last week I touched on four topics, if I remember correctly. Today, I believe I have five topics on total. Let me count them real quick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6. I actually have 6 things. Let's say 5. And there is actually, going back over this again, there's a 1. One of them is a recap. So technically, we have a recap element that I'll start off with, and then we'll have 5. So there's really 5. So there, I talked about an element last week that had to do with challenges that come up when you're considering a new role. And some red flags, some things, some markers that come up, things that occur that are trying to give us a heads up that there's something going on here that we definitely want to be aware of, that if you go into a certain scenario, blindfolded, rose-colored glasses, head in the ground, that you will eventually pass through and suffer some consequences, something that, you know, you think it's uncomfortable to hear about this. It's worse to experience it. So you have a choice. You can deal with the content that's presented and then steer your way around it, recognize it, be thankful, be grateful that you recognized it, and then do the right thing to get around it, to go a different direction. Or you could ignore it completely and run smack dab into that brick wall. And now it's worse. So, you know, keep that in mind. Let's have some critical thinking on that. I left one thing out. I forgot to mention something when I was talking about that last week. And there are times, and trying to look at it from the perspective of what's going on at that place of employment, that we need to be aware of. Because especially in this day and time where a lot of people are looking for jobs, and a lot of people, you talk to them, they'll tell you that they're desperate. Seniors, people who have been in the game for a very long time, are being discriminated against. I have observed that a lot of the visual designers have pretty much taken over the vast majority of what's going on in UX today. And I talked to somebody else who's a world-class UX researcher, and they said that academics are taking over the research space. So now we've got the visual designers taking over the UX work. You've got people coming out of academia taking over the research work, trying to turn, I've talked about this before, trying to turn and turning UX research into academic research. And both are failed propositions because the visual designers just want to make things look good. They don't know or care anything about users. They fake their way through it. You talk to them and they'll tell you they're faking it till they make it. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what's going on. And they hate real UX practitioners and will do anything they can to make sure that we don't become a part of their team, so they don't have to deal with, be accountable to what we're talking about. The academics are trying to turn UX research into academic research, which includes the dynamics, the interpersonal dynamic, which they don't have. We're just shooting straight. they try to change the timelines because the timelines between UX research and academic research are drastically different. They're trying to make sure that certain activities are engaged in, and they may or may not be the right thing to do to generate wins for the business and for users. And this is bad. So UX researchers are being displaced. Seasoned UX researchers, seasoned UX practitioners are being displaced, all at the expense of the discipline and its perception. And these things are not good. And that's all addendum. The part that I forgot to mention last week is that it's critical that when you're going into a new job, you're excited because now you're getting an interview. Don't get so excited that you fail to face what might be frustrating about where you're going. Please don't do that. You need to always make sure that you examine a team's chemistry. And we've talked about that, and I believe I mentioned that. last week. So, you know, that's not what I'm trying to get at. I'll let you know when I get to the part that I forgot. Here are some other addendums. When you see a team full of former visual designers and you yourself are a genuine UX practitioner, put your seatbelt on because you're probably about to go for a ride. So don't get shocked when you get a rejection notice. Don't get shocked about the way that they ask you questions or what they ask you questions about. They are going to reduce the evaluation process into a beauty contest and into an aesthetics exercise. They are not concerned about you actually knowing UX fundamentals and doing things the right way. And again, that's still not what I forgot to mention last week. Just an addendum. When you see retrofitted, and that's what they are a lot of times, retrofitted visual designers, some transitioned in, and I talked about this before, in the first year of the podcast, when you're coming into UX from another field, you have to transition in. You don't just come in with the same mentality. You don't just come in with the same skill set. A person has to transition into UX. They have to transition into UX research. If you're a former academic coming into UX to do research, welcome. Glad you're here, but please know and understand that UX research is not academic research, and you need to change your mentality. You need to change your approach to the work. And you, if you're new, you're entry level. I've seen people come in from the academic world. They've done research. I've seen people come in from the marketing world doing market research, and they want to be principals. They want to run the show. And companies that don't know any better will give people exactly that. That's not good because that person is going to fail. I mean, bring the person in, but don't set them up to fail. Don't give them Dunning-Krugeritis. Don't give them something that they haven't earned yet, because merit has gone by the wayside. Merit means nothing anymore in a lot of UX circles. So this is critical. Come in, earn your way, just like everybody else did. Everybody's always talking about, you got to give me a chance. No, we used to earn chances. So we need to get back to the point of earning chances. The meritocracy, the meritorious mindset needs to be restored in U.S. So just in UX, it's in U.S. But when you see retrofitted visual designers everywhere, as you examine the team's dynamics to see who's on that team when you're about to interview, that lets you know, that tells you something about the leadership on that team. A lot of people for some years, they're saying, oh, we can't find anybody. Hiring good UX people is so hard. In a sense, no, it's not, because when a lot of companies say that, if you are networking at all and you talk to people, you'll find out that the companies that say that were rejecting seasoned UX professionals. So they were creating a scenario that in their minds justified hiring unqualified people and putting them into those same roles. So that's a joke. That's a smokescreen. That was not a thing. It's not difficult to hire UX people that know what they're doing, that deserve to be in those roles. So that's garbage. That simply is not true. Here's the red flag. Here's the marker that I failed to mention last week. When you see that a leader has everybody, I alluded to it. Now that I think about it, I did allude to it a little bit, but I don't think I finished talking about it. When you see that, this is the part I did mention, you have a leader, you have a bunch of people under them, and all of them retrofits, posers, upstarts. The part I forgot to mention was that tells you about that person's leadership style. That tells you about how much of a stand-up person that person is. That tells you how well and how much that individual is going to support you as a genuine UX practitioner if something challenging arises. And that is one of the most uncomfortable, terrible scenarios that anybody can find themselves in, is to be in a position, have a passion for doing work the right way, and having leaders that care nothing about you and will do absolutely nothing to support you. They have supported the posers. They have supported the retrofits. They have supported the upstarts. But when they get a real, genuine UX professional, they will not support you in over 90% of those situations. And I'm being nice when I say that, it's probably much worse. You want to be careful, because if you accept a job where that dynamic is at work, you need to be at least have, if you got to take it, sometimes you just got to take a role. Please be aware of what you're about to walk into, and don't be surprised when things go south, because it's highly likely that they will. And that is an ugly, ugly, ugly situation for someone to be in. And again, that's what I forgot to mention last week. So know that this is all a red flag of who that leader is. And things are not going to bode well for you. Now, that's part what I forgot to mention last week. Let's get into the new topics for this week, the five for this week. For this first one, I'm actually building on something that I said last week, and I want to give a couple more examples of companies. They have terrible hiring practices when it comes to UX, and it's starting to show. This is starting to become more and more common, where you have a really bad experience, and some people don't know the hiring practices of these companies. I do. I make it a point to know. Even when I'm not in the market, I'm always digging into job postings, looking to see what postings are out there, what are companies hiring for, how long are these postings out there, how frequent are these postings finding their way into the standard, more popular places where people go to look for UX jobs. And when you see this, it helps me understand what the trends are concerning hiring. And I'm going to call out, I love this company, but their hiring practices are god awful. And they're always hiring UX professionals. I know people that have worked at this company as UX professionals. I've heard the stories about what's going on with regard to how UX professionals are treated, appreciated. But I love this company. I'm a customer of this company. But we've got the disconnect. Bad experiences, terrible hiring practices. So the people that are getting the jobs are not really executing on UX the right way. And then people like you and people like me are suffering the consequences of that bad combo. And the first company I'm going to call out today by name is Verizon. Verizon, boo. Verizon, when you go to their site, if you forget your password, or say you just want to change your password, so you initiate the forgot password process. This just started happening within the last month or so. And when you initiate the process, I mean, consider the fact they want people to pay their bills, right? Of course they do. Why would a company that wants you, they're dependent upon customers being able to pay their bills in order to have their well-being, right? What a novel idea. You ever had problems giving a company money? I have from time to time. And you just laugh because they don't make sure that things are working properly. And you know, you have the macro level, you have the micro level. And sometimes things are working at the macro level, but when you get into the weeds and you look at an experience, that's when we find out that things are broken. And a seasoned, trusted, truly professional UX practitioner is going to be aware of what's happening both at the macro and the micro levels. So when you start the forgot password process on Verizon, this process is completely broken. You can click on forgot password. It takes you through the basic steps, and they're usually the same on pretty much every site with some very slight variation between the different experiences. But interestingly, they ask you to put in your phone number or your ID, your login ID. The field is not active, so you can't enter your phone number. You can't enter the information so you complete the process. And so the button that you use to complete the process is also grayed out. The field, the data entry field, is you can't click, you can't enter it. And so you can't click or do anything else. The only option that you have that's live is to cancel the experience. That's ridiculous. So, and for those who might not understand it, how do you examine something from a micro level? you look at the steps. You do a task analysis. You want to learn about task analysis, go and get Larry Marine did a book on task analysis recently. Go and get his book, one of the more recent books on the topic, so you can learn how to do a task analysis. Every UX professional should know how to do a task analysis. But today, again, the visual designers are taking over, and all people care about is that things look good. The Verizon site doesn't appear to have any aesthetic flaws. It has issues at the functional base. It has issues at the practical basis. It has issues when it comes to users being able to complete a task. And that's a deal breaker for the brand. It's a deal breaker for profitability. How many people get frustrated and leave and go to another carrier? So these types of things can happen, but they're just really weird, silly, interesting things today. But if a company wants people to be able to complete a task, you cannot allow there to be roadblocks along the steps of the task analysis. Because when you do the task analysis, you have steps, 5, 6, 7, 8 steps. Those are your micro points. If step 1, 2, and 3 work, but steps 4 and 5 are broken at the micro level, you've got a disconnect in the user experience, and that needs to be resolved. That's what we do. That's what a UX person should do. Not just coming in and spitballing some look and feel and then don't know how the thing works. We need to know how it works. We need to know whether or not it works. Where's the usability testing? Shouldn't that have been discovered in usability testing? Well, apparently not, because Darren Hood could not change his password and pay his bill. Ironically, it works on mobile. Oh, it's flawless on mobile, but it doesn't work on desktop. I got to say that too. And which, ironically, is a telltale sign of who's doing the work. Because truth be told, and I almost hate to say this, but it's true, younger designers a lot of times do not empathize. They do not empathize. And so why would you ever seen an experience that works on mobile but not on desktop? Why would somebody deploy something that doesn't work for every form factor that people engage with? Why would that even be the case? And people keep buying into this whole mobile first mindset. And I talked about this before. We should not have a mobile first mindset. Even if you did have a mobile first mindset, you have to embrace the thing that I talk about is mobile also. You need to make sure that what you're doing, the experience works across every form factor. Does it work on mobile? Fine. If you're forced to do mobile first, fine. Make sure that same experience works on desktop. Make sure it works on a tablet. Make sure it's working any and everywhere where a user can engage. And only then does the experience work. Only then have you succeeded. But Verizon, bad idea. Bad idea. And so this favors younger users, and this is a deal breaker. This is unethical from a user experience standpoint. So we need to know and understand that today. The second example I want to call out, and I'm not going to call this company out by name. I decided not to call this company out by name, but it's really sad. A lot of medical companies have started rolling out portals. I love them. You can get in touch with your doctor anytime you want. You can see the results from some of your tests anytime you want. You can make appointments. You can reschedule appointments. You can do all kinds of things without calling the office. A lot of self-service, a lot of stuff where you can really take charge of what's going on with you as a patient, as a medical patient. But unfortunately, a lot of the medical companies are doing the same thing that a lot of other companies are doing. They will not hire truly qualified UX professionals. They are cutting corners. They are hiring people's buddies. The isms are running rampant, whether it's ageism, sexism, racism. It doesn't matter what it is. Just the isms are running amok today in professional spaces, not just in UX, but in professional spaces at large. And when you get people who are faking it till they make it, when you get roles that are filled with posers, retrofits, and upstarts, and with people that do not have any domain knowledge, it results in yielding experiences that put patients and medical staff at risk. And when this happens, you have people who don't understand what UX is all about, trying to execute, I should say, on a user experience, and somebody's life is in the balance, folks, that's not good. I had a conversation with someone recently whose mother, an older woman, she absolutely refuses to use her medical portal because the thing just doesn't work. It's not intuitive. The information architecture is bad. You go to perform a task and you can't complete it. You have to jump through too many hoops. It's just really sad. And one of the things I noticed recently, and I had a conversation with somebody at one doctor's office, how they try to get you to sort of register before your arrival, to sign in before your arrival, to do all of this stuff on your mobile phone or on your computer, however you decide to do it. And nobody really checked the experience to make sure it works properly. So they want you to register before you arrive, but the thing doesn't work. So it's really funny. And then the person at the counter is like really stressing, well, we really, really would like for you to do this. Well, then make it work. If you want me to do it, make it work. Don't have it breaking and not working on one thing and not another, and working on step one but not on step three. Then you end up going to the office and filling out paperwork manually anyway. So it is really something. It's strange, and it's extremely sad and catastrophic in some cases that poor hiring, and we talked about the dysfunctional world of UX hiring. You wouldn't think that the fallout would impact people, that the ripple effect would go this far out to the point that it could actually become a life death situation. And a lot of people don't realize that. They're so happy that they got a job. People are so happy that they got a check, but they do not take the impact of what they do seriously. And they just get in there, and as long as they get a check, they don't care. They don't care if there's somebody at home that's frustrated and now their blood pressure is going up because of the frustration that your design is causing them. So just a lot of interesting things, but this is really common today. And until we start to right the ship in UX, it's just going to get worse. And user experiences are getting worse by the minute. User experiences are getting worse. We wish people would start doing things better, but it is what it is. Next topic. I want to share just a handful, and these are going to be pretty quick today. I'm going to share just three quick examples of interview discrimination. You have a lot of people who are in the market for UX jobs. You see it all over the place, especially if you're on LinkedIn, which is probably the hotbed for interacting with people who are searching for jobs and networking about jobs, things of that nature. And everybody is happy when you finally, I mean, you get all these terrible rejection notices, which are also god-awful and are indicative of the problem in this arena. But you finally get an interview and you're happy because you got an interview, but the interview could just be a continuation of the same frustration. And in many cases, that's all you're going to get, is that same frustration. You get to the interview, but now, instead of just getting a terrible rejection notice or getting bounced by an ATS system, what if you get subjected to discrimination? A lot of people are experiencing exactly this. And I just want to give you three quick examples. Again, just trying to help you get the rose-colored glasses away. Don't approach this thing. Don't be so giddy. Don't be so Pollyanna oriented, because people say, Darren, I want to see what's positive. You need to understand everything. if you don't understand everything, you're going to set yourself up. And the disappointment can be really terrible. Just be aware is all I'm challenging people to be. Be aware. It's really, really important to be aware. It's really, really important to be a realist and not an optimist. You can have an optimistic look without losing a sense of realism. And that's what we challenge people to do today. But just real quick, three things, situations that highlight the discrimination that can come up during a job search or interview process specifically. Somebody had an interview once, and in the interview, the person was completely qualified for the role. The company had confirmed that the person was a perfect fit for the role, But at the end of the day, the hiring manager told the candidate, you know what? We probably shouldn't make you an offer for this because you're going to be bored. Why in the world and who has the right to tell somebody what's going to bore them? Why would somebody make such an assumption about another individual thinking that they would be bored? Really, they simply didn't want to hire the person and ended up hiring somebody who really fit a profile that was associated with that job. And so they really just didn't want to hire because the candidate was a minority. They did not want to hire that minority. So they just made up an excuse to justify it and to silence their own conscience and something that they wouldn't get in trouble about from a legal perspective. So they just said, the person told themselves that the person would get bored and didn't hire the person. That's insane. That's insane. A similar story. So I'm going to interject another one here. Talked to somebody recently who said that they were in a UX role at a company that did not have good UX maturity. Okay, and that's fine. But what ended up happening was they worked for the company and they were a contractor and they worked for the company for 3 months. And they worked for the company for 3 months. The company actually was frustrated. They kept trying to get the person to do UI work and didn't really want the person to do UX work. So when the person's 3-month contract ended, they did not renew the contract. What they did do was start trying to hire again. But this time, instead of hiring for a UX person, they realized the error of their ways. And they were trying to hire a UI designer. So now they're going to hire what they were trying to get the whole time. That's not where the discrimination came in. The discrimination came in when they literally, this person knew about the job. So they sent people they knew to apply for this role. And at least one of them got to the interviewing stage. But what they discovered, where the discrimination occurred, and I can't believe somebody actually did this. And I know some of you are going to be, if not all of you, are going to be shocked about what you're about to hear me say. They said, you know, we want to, for this role, the person we hire for this role has to be white. They literally said that. They told the person that the person that we hire must be a white male. Can you believe that? Can you believe that somebody had the audacity to say that in an interview? In an interview. So it's amazing how some people, the gall, just the audacity, the brazen mindset that some people have, they don't care about anything anymore. And it's just sad how some people have become emboldened to have this type of a mindset, this behavioral pattern, and not concerned about any consequences whatsoever. It's just ridiculous. So it's really sad. But there are people who will do that today, and there are people who will do it and not tell you that that is the case. And we'll talk about that again momentarily. There was a situation where, and this one happened to me, where I was interviewing for a large retail company and I was excited about the company. I liked the company and it was for a manager role. And I thought, okay, this is great. I get to go into a manager role. This would be fantastic. I'm happy about the company. I'm happy about the job posting. I'm a match. I know that. Let's go. Let's get into it. And I interviewed with the screener and the screener was excited about me. And screeners often are. So don't let yourself get excited about what happens with a screener. I have met very few screeners that were not excited about who they were talking to. So, and then if you're not careful, you get excited and you get infected with their excitement when their excitement is not really realistic for you. You haven't met anybody on the team yet. So you need that excitement has to be tempered or you're going to be set up to be more frustrated when you find out they're not going to move forward with you. At any rate, the screener was very excited to talk to me. The screener was excited to move me to the next level and said that they would pass the information on to the hiring manager. The word I got back, and I did not move forward in the process with this big retailer, who shortly thereafter filed bankruptcy. So that maybe was good that I didn't go in there because I think they're gone now. I'm not 100% sure, but I think they're gone. I mean, this happened, the bankruptcy happened like 3 months later. So I could have been a victim of that had I gone in there. So thank God that things didn't move forward. But the person said that, yeah, Darren, he looks like he's a good candidate, but he doesn't have any e-commerce experience. Guess what we didn't talk about during the screening session? Guess what the person overlooked on my resume? The person did not, I was not asked if I had e-commerce experience, which I do have e-commerce experience. I actually once built an e-commerce site from the ground up. So it's not, I am not void of e-commerce experience. It was just convenient for that individual to trick themselves into believing that I did not have e-commerce experience, so they no longer had to consider me. Now, the discrimination that happened in this case, it's something I've talked about before, but there are a ton of situations where people who were hired to run UX teams either have no UX experience at all, or they have very little. And when they have very little, and in the cases where they don't have any at all, the last thing these people want to see is somebody like me who has over 20 years of experience, because they don't want to hire anybody. They think that we all want their job. They think they have to protect their job. And so they do engage in some type of discrimination in order to disqualify people like me. I know other people who go through the same thing. They want to disqualify us as candidates. And so they just come up with something. They just come up with any kind of story just to eliminate us. And so it's really, really, really sad. But this is happening a lot. These are real things that happen. They're very disappointing. They're very frustrating. But they happen. And we need to be big boys and big girls and face it and move on and not let it make us bitter and not take the attitude from that situation to the next interview. You do not want to do that. And it's very easy to do if you're not emotionally intelligent about all of this stuff. Then the last example with regard to this discrimination, and it has to do with a code word that lets you know that there's going to be some discrimination or there's some discrimination at work. I interviewed for a startup and the person was excited. In this case, I was talking to the hiring manager and the hiring manager was doing the screening and the hiring manager was excited to talk to me. They told me, I am so excited to talk to you. To talk to somebody like you with your level of experience. Wow, I just looking forward to this conversation. This is great. So let's get into it. So we get into the interview. We had a dynamite conversation. I was excited about it. I tend to temper my excitement because it doesn't usually pan out very well. But I want to make sure that I'm not setting myself up for too much frustration. That's not a good thing. I want to manage my emotions when we get into these types of scenarios. When all was said and done, I didn't hear from anybody for about 3 weeks. So you usually know that that's where that's gone. And the person gets back in touch with me and they thank me for taking time to speak with them, but they decided to go with other candidates. But they told me, and they actually said this during the interview, which was my sign that we weren't going further. So I made sure I paint this picture accurately. The person told me, they said, you know, yeah, you've got a lot of great experience, but you know what? You're really overqualified. What in the world does overqualified mean? It's not like I'm an engineer and trying to get a job flipping burgers at McDonald's. That's overqualified. Overqualified means that your skill set is drastically beyond the role that you're coming into to the extent that there's no way in the world you're going to want to do this because somebody else is going to come and snap you up. And so it's counterproductive for us to hire you. That's what overqualified really means. That's when it fits. The scenario. You're not going to hire a burger flipper to go to McDonald's because you know that when a door opens for them to go and be an engineer somewhere, they're gone. And I know that's an extreme example, but it does illustrate the point. When this person said, I'm overqualified, they had no desire. That means that they think that I'm going to cost too much money, which is a joke. It's money. it pays mortgages. It buys gasoline. You don't have a car. You have an electric vehicle. It pays for the charging mechanism. We have a life to live. It's not about how much money. And so when people say you're overqualified, I applied for the role. Apparently I'm interested in it. And so, but when people do that, they're going to discriminate. It's either going to be an age-based thing. They're discriminating against your seniority. Something of some sort that's not ethical is about to transpire. And so when you hear those things, that's not a compliment. It's not a compliment. Something bad is about to follow that. I've never heard somebody say you're overqualified and then something good come out of it. So just be aware of things like that. Let's move on to the next set. Next set, we're going to build on interview discrimination and talk for a few minutes about interview nightmares. And I'm going to try to get through these as quickly as I can. And I think I talked about this one before, but I had an interview once at a company where the person at the interview, I got through the screening, I got through all the way to next to the final stage. And when I get to this stage, the person who comes to the interview, for the first 10 minutes, they vent, 5 to 10 minutes or so. I don't remember exactly how long, but it's definitely between 5 to 10 minutes. The person is venting because they're upset because the company is looking to move. They're looking to open an office in Metro Detroit. They were operating in another part of the country, and they were moving some of their operations from that location to Detroit. So they wanted to hire some UX people for this locale. The person that was doing the interview, the interviewing, worked in the area that they were moving the work from. So needless to say, they were not happy to see work being transferred. So that manifested itself in the interviews. Two things happened. One, my interview was sabotaged. So this first story is one of sabotage. This person, not only did they try to make sure that no qualified people got the roles, because they wanted to make sure that the work failed, which it did not. That office was here for quite some time. I don't know if it's still here, but that office was here for quite some time, and for at least a decade or so. And not only did they want to make sure that or not let qualified people get the roles, and she's venting to me about the whole thing, which, and why are you telling somebody who's interviewing something like this? But they made it a point to approve moving forward with people who were not qualified. Matter of fact, the people I knew about who got the roles were visual designers. So they were trying to get visual designers in those roles, knowing that the user was going to suffer in the process. So this is some pretty scary stuff. So interviews can and will be sabotaged more than we care to think. So this is why I tell people, don't get too excited about that interview. Go ahead and get through the interview and see where it goes from there. But it's not, you're not in a great position just because you got an interview. Keep yourself grounded and execute on the interview and keep your head on a swivel and remember to interview them at the same time. Don't be so focus on the fact they're interviewing you that you forget to interview them. But that should go without saying. But some people, we need to remind some people about that. That's one example. Another example is when you have out of place people participating in the interview process. This is not good. I interviewed at one company, another relatively large company, and I had a series. All the interviews were back to back to back to back. And I hate when that happens because that doesn't usually pan out well either. But and you're drained by the time you get through all of that. I don't know why anybody, people don't consider things like that. But a series of back-to-back-to-back fantastic sessions, fantastic Q&A, fantastic discussions. And then I get to the last session. And in the last session, there's a design exercise. And in the design exercise, I really didn't know how this was going to work out. But I was skeptical. And the reason I was skeptical is because the participants in this session were researchers. They wanted researchers to evaluate my design exercise. And they should not have been there. You had these researchers, they were asking all the wrong questions. Bias was being manifest. They were saying and doing things to provoke. They were not evaluating me as a candidate. they were actually, it was almost like they were hazing me, and they were subjecting me to all types of abuse during the process. I know how to evaluate people, and I know that that's not evaluation, what they were doing. So when companies, and I've seen companies before interview people and subject people on the spot to psychological tests. I've seen people give people puzzles. They have nothing to do with the work. And I've seen people ask people ridiculous questions. I had once interviewed at a Fortune 50 company, and a person asked me about background patterns for design. They were literally talking to me about how you put a background in a web page, a background image. And I'm going, wow, did you really just ask me that? It was so crazy. It was such a crazy interview. And it was a panel interview with 10 people, and it was live. I'm in a room with 10 people. One of them looked like they were a Klansman, looked like he was going to kill me when the interview was over. And he's staring at me like that the whole time. Another person went to sleep during the interview. So that was pretty weird. I was trying to deal with that. There were so many strange things going on, and the team simply was not skilled at interviewing. But so we get excited about interviews, and we need to temper that. You have no idea what you're about to walk into. And too many times we assume that interviewers know what they're doing. A lot of times they have no idea whatsoever. So play it by ear. Be ready. Have your head on a swivel. Be professional. Be cordial. Have great presence. But don't make silly assumptions that are going to result in you being overly frustrated or things of that nature. It's not a good thing to do. The third example of the interview nightmare scenario is that of sexism. I have, and some people are really going to hate that I say this, but I'm not apologizing for this. I'm going to preface this by saying I know a lot of great, sound people in the discipline. I'm very happy. I'm thankful. I'm grateful for the people that I know that bring a lot to the table. It's a fantastic thing to have people, quality people that you can interact with. I have seen teams across the landscape of UX that are great teams, small teams, bigger teams. Bigger teams are a challenge, but there's one team that I work with that was just, I really missed that team. I left that company. They had a team of, if I remember correctly, over 20 people. And I'm not even going to say who they were or anything like that. But still to this day, I miss the dynamic that that team had. It was a fun place to work. It was a rewarding place to work. It was a cool place to work. But there are a lot of them that are not good. And one of the things that has become quite prevalent in UX has become extremely clicky these days. There are people that have established clicks, and if you don't make the click happy, you're going to suffer for it, and they're going to make you suffer for it. There are a lot of sexist clicks. There are a lot of ageist clicks. There are a lot of school-oriented clicks. It's bad. It's extremely bad. And these are interview nightmares, right? I have been in situations where the interviewers were all female. I know groups of females that are dynamite. I love them. I support them. I have no problem with them. But I also am starting to see more and more teams of females in particular, and this happens usually with females, and they don't want to hire a male. They want to make sure that we are not hiring a man for this team. We are going to give everybody a hard time. If they're male, we're going to give them a hard time. I have had my interviews sabotaged. The story earlier, that happened with a female, but it was only one. But when you go to an interview, I had an interview not long ago. Going to call him out. Not by name, but going to call him out. The initial interview, the person in charge, the hiring manager, well, he wasn't really the hiring manager. He was, but he wasn't. He was so excited. He had heard me speak before. He was so excited to speak to me. He told me after my initial interview that you have set the bar so high that it's going to be somebody else going to have a hard time beating you out for this role. He told me that. The next thing you know, I get a note, and the note tells that, okay, we're moving you on to the next confirming, because they had already told me. We're moving on to the next round of interviews, and you're going to meet with person A, person B, and person C. Three females. I knew immediately. I just had a gut feeling that this is not, it's over. Now my candidacy for this role is over, because usually, and again, it was just a gut feeling. I've interviewed with female teams before and not had a problem, but you have the perception. You understand if they respect you or not. And I have to say, of the three females I interviewed with, one of them was solid, no issues. The other one was a maybe, the other one was a definite no. So, and that was the one that had the most experience, and all three of them were former graphic folks. So that was strike two for me when I saw that. And then, okay, I'm going to interview with three females. They're all former graphic designers. That's usually not going to bode well for somebody with my background. And then the third strike was, okay, make sure you bring some designs to talk about during the interview. And I knew that was strike three, because that means I'm going to be discriminated against and I'm going to be viewed from an aesthetics and a visual design perspective and not from a UX perspective. This is a UX role, but they're going to evaluate me like a visual designer. So that's strike three. I'm not going to get this job. I already knew that. But it's sexist. There's so much sexism. And a funny thing, a lot of the sexist people in UX, usually female, complain about what guys did and how guys keep them from advancing, only to turn around and do the same exact thing that they complain about that guys are doing. If you're guilty of the same thing, that's hypocrisy. Some people are going to hate my guts for saying this, but you know it's true. And this clicky stuff that's happening from a sexist perspective, it is not good. And for me, I get subjected to sexist torment. I get subjected to racist torment. I get subjected to ageist torment. It's crazy, folks. It's absolutely crazy. But it's sad that you know when you're not going to get a job because of who's doing the interviewing, that you can call that out. I could tell somebody what was going to happen before I went to that interview. And no, it wasn't self-fulfilling prophecy. I was professional in this session, but I was objectified in that session because I was a male. And one person told me during the interview, I am having such a hard time keeping up with you. Wow, you have such a great level of experience and you have so much knowledge. Okay, so what's the problem? I am fully qualified. I exceed the qualifications for the role you're hiring for, but it doesn't matter because your chromosomes are wrong. Folks, this needs to end today. Next topic. For the next one, this is another one that some folks are not going to like. But I mentioned earlier that there are a lot of people out there that are looking for jobs in the UX world. I'm a contractor right now, and I'm looking because I don't know if I'm ever going to get hired to work at this company. So I put myself out there. And somebody at the company I'm contracting for hears that. They can't blame me for doing it. I'm sure they can't. But here's the thing that I want to address. It has nothing to do with that directly. It has to do with the fact that some people, when they enter the market, these posts that you see on LinkedIn, and it's sort of a default post. It's something that you can activate when you end your time at one company that LinkedIn gives you the option. And say, hey, I'm in the market for new opportunities. But it's the way that people, the voice and the tone, people do it in a way that, hey, I'm out of a job now. If you find something, please recommend me. And I get it to a degree, but some of the people, they reflect a sense of entitlement. It's as if not only am I looking for a job now, out of a job and looking for a job now, but recommend me for anything that you have. Like, make sure that you allow me to jump in front of everybody else. It's I'm entitled. Give me the first available UX job. Forget about the fact that other people have been looking for a job for a year. Help me to get a job. I've been out of a job for 5 hours. Help me find another job. There's a voice and tone of entitlement. If you're in the market, let people know you're in the market. Put the open to work banner up there. People talk about that thing, whether or not we should do it. Put it out there so people at a glance can see that you're in the market. Go ahead and share the little post that says that you're in the market, but don't assume that you deserve a job more than anybody else who's all, especially these people who've been looking for, yeah, I know people have been looking for a job for almost 2 years. They're looking for a UX job and they're qualified. So, but this voice and tone of entitlement, it's really sad. And the funny thing is, and this is where it really gets, again, hypocritical, where you see some of these people who are looking for a UX job and they were discriminating through the isms or whatever means, were discriminating against other people when they had their job. Now they're looking for a job and then they want to throw themselves in front of everybody else. They were entitled when they had the job. They're entitled when they don't have a job. This is not good. And I'm just calling out the hypocrisy and the lack of ethics associated with this mindset today. We're being overrun with unethical mindsets and behaviors in UX today, and all of them are doing damage to the discipline. So I'm going to call it out. It's not like I'm putting myself in a bad way by doing it, because people don't like hearing what I'm talking about half the time anyway. And people think that I need to be silenced. And so it doesn't matter. I'm not making anything any worse for myself by calling this out, but I'm helping somebody out at the same time. So we will continue. And our last one for this session. For the last topic, portfolio theft. It's funny that portfolios themselves have been regarded as the top and most critical type of currency that a person needs to have. Forget resumes. Forget actually having skill. Just give me a portfolio. I don't even have to reflect what's in the portfolio. That's the way, that's the mindset people have. So everybody just got to have this portfolio. They want to stand out. How do you stand out? You want to stand out? Be qualified. How about that? There's not a lot of people who are qualified. So how about being qualified? That'll help you stand out. But portfolio theft is real. If you have not already put your portfolio behind a password, I recommend that you do. Asterisk. Know and understand that when you put a password on your portfolio, some employers no longer now want to talk to you because you're making it harder for them to see your portfolio. But you make it harder for them to see your portfolio. They just got to enter the password. But you also make it harder for other people to steal your portfolio. I keep hearing more and more stories. Now, I've had my portfolio stolen before and presented my information only for the hiring manager and for the interviewers to tell me that they had seen the content before because somebody had stolen it, took my work, put it in their portfolio. What a crazy scenario. But I keep hearing stories. I thought my situation was bad. I keep hearing stories about hiring managers who have had people applying for roles present their work to them during a job interview. How insane is that? To go into an interview to wait to see somebody's work and see your work presented to you. In one case, it was so bad that the person actually presented the hiring manager's work to the hiring manager, and it still had the hiring manager's name on it. They didn't even take it off. People are so desperate to get a UX role that they will do anything to get that role, including lying about their qualifications and stealing somebody else's work. So portfolio theft is a thing. And in order to be ethical, I think it is ethical for all of us to put our portfolios behind a password to keep other people from stealing the content. If you do not, don't be surprised when somebody is in a role because they took your work and enabled them to get that role. This is rampant today. I even had somebody reach out to me, two people in the last 2 to 3 weeks reach out to me. Well, you sure do have a great background. I'd really love to see your work. I'd like to pattern my portfolio after yours. Can I get you? I noticed that you have a password. Can I get your password? No, they were coming to steal it. They were coming to steal my work. They weren't coming to mimic how I approached it. You don't need to mimic anybody's portfolio. That's not going to do anything for you. People are coming to steal it. And I blocked their ability to do so. So folks, portfolio theft is real. And the folks who are doing the hiring need to understand that today. If somebody can't talk you through, that's why when I have been a hiring manager, I want a person to talk about the work. If a person can't hold a conversation about UX, that is how you know the person is not really qualified to do the work. So don't fall for the portfolio okey-doke. There are counterfeit UXers. They abound. There are actors. There are imposters, impersonators, posers, retrofits, upstarts. They abound, and they take other people's work. People take fake work and put it in there and claim that it's theirs. Don't fall for the portfolio okey-doke today. And remember the risk. When you put a password on your portfolio, there's a lot of hiring managers who complain. I've heard a ton of them complain because somebody's work is under a password, but they don't understand the risks of not doing such. But, you know, if you experience that, don't come back to me. Know that that's the risk that you take. But I think there's a greater risk if you don't. So that's it. But folks, that is it for this potpourri session. We should have another interview to share with you over the course of the next two episodes, but wanted to share these really, really hardcore topics today. And I know some people are going to be upset with me behind this, but these things are critical. They're real. This is the world, folks, and we got to deal with it. But until next week, folks, I wish everyone, as always, all the best. And until next time, this is Darren Hood, the host of The World of UX, signing off. Happy UXing, everybody.
This time of year, the school calendar really starts to fill up. Spring activities, testing season, and that final push toward the end of the year. It's a great moment for kids to stay focused and build confidence in what they're learning. That's where IXL comes in. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand their schoolwork, from math and reading to writing and science. It's designed for pre-K through 12th grade, with personalized interactive content that adapts to each child's level and pace. IXL makes it easy to stay on track with instant feedback and clear explanations, skills organized by grade level, and simple progress tracking. It fits into even the busiest spring schedules. It's also trusted nationwide. In fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.